and welcome to the MCP Insider Series, Ask Me Anything. I'm your host today, Jason Helmick from Pluralsight, and joining me today, the amazing, the unbelievable mastermind of everything PowerShell and more, the distinguished engineer, Jeffrey Snover. Jeffrey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. By the way, you forgot to say the world's first.
The world's first?
AMA.
This is the world's first AMA, and of course...
Oh, MVA.
MVA. But of course, they had to have you, because, I mean, after all, I mean, look at what you've done.
Well, what we've done, the MVAs are quite popular, my understand.
The MVAs are very popular.
I got to tell you, I go to conferences, and people tell me how much they like the MVAs and how much they learn. So, by the way, so you should tell your colleagues, use the MVAs, because apparently they're quite effective.
And we're even going to point some of them in particular out to you to help you with PowerShell and other things that are of goodness. And, you know, the idea here was that you had a chance to submit questions, and we're going to ask those questions. Now, we are on kind of a time budget, so if we don't get all of the questions, we're also going to show you where you can go to get these answers for these and anything else. But we're going to ask questions.
We call that the internet.
Yeah, we call it the internet, but we'll give you some good places on the internet too. But this is an opportunity for us to get a chance to interview and talk with Jeffrey Snover. Now, if you haven't already heard, there's this thing called PowerShell. And actually, Jeffrey, I kind of want to start it a little bit at the beginning. First of all, tell people who you are.
Okay, so howdy, I'm Jeffrey Snover. I'm a distinguished engineer, and I'm the lead architect for Windows Server and for the System Center Data Center products.
Now, that's a good start, but I've got more questions.
Oh.
Oh. First of all, PowerShell is just a de facto standard at Microsoft at this point.
Yeah.
And all products utilize it for their management platform. We do automation, configuration management, which we're going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Take us back to the beginning. How did you come up with this idea? And who did you conspire with to get this started?
Yeah, so I knew that we needed a admin scripting model. And an admin scripting model is where the user, you know, basically, like, nobody believes documentation. And there's a reason why. You know, it's either useless or it's wrong, right? So you pick. Now, it turns out, oddly enough, the PowerShell documentation's pretty good. But in general, that's the exception. And what I knew was that the way admins really work was they get on a system and they find out the way it really works. So you want to be able to type and explore the system, kind of spelunking around. And then you say, okay, now I figured it out. Here's what I want to do. And so then you want to put it in a script. And then you want to be pretty informal about that. You want to go fast, right? So like most of my scripts are named T. Right, it's just like T.
T, enter.
Exactly. And then it's like, okay, well, no, actually, that's a good one. I'm going to keep that one around. So then you be a little bit more formal. And it's like, oh, I'm going to share it with you. I'm going to share it with Jason. It's like, I can't name it T anymore. I better give it a proper name and be a little bit more formal. And then it's like, hey, that's pretty good. We should use it in production. It's like, oh, well, in that case, you know, I got to be a little bit more formal. And then, hey, this, I think other people could use this. Let's put it up in a repository. And then all of a sudden, it's like, hey, well, let's do the help and be formal. So you wanted to have this nice sliding scale. That was it.
Well, but it, I mean, that was it. So what were some of the obstacles in you trying
Microsoft.
To...
Microsoft. Oh. That was the biggest obstacle, right? Because, no, seriously, because it was, you know, I'd have executives ask me the question, Jeffrey, exactly what part of expletive deleted Windows is confusing you? So trying to do a command line interface at Microsoft, the GUI company, was a big cultural challenge. Big cultural challenge.
Well, absolutely. And for a lot of us that come from other environments too, other than Microsoft, we were accustomed to having automation in our IT lifestyle as operators. And in the Microsoft environment, that there were options, but they were all challenging and somewhat limiting. And so you managed to push this through. That definitely was a huge challenge to a what part of Windows don't you get, sir, kind of thing. But, you know, one of the curious things...
If we weren't on video, I'd, like, give you the full... It's when you emphasize...
It's when you really emphasize...
It made it really clear. It was really clear, like...
Well, we're glad that you didn't get the Windows part, because this worked out really well for you. Do something else. I get this question all the time. Explain to us what a distinguished engineer is and some of the other things that you do today.
So basically at Microsoft, we have two tracks, right? As you go up the ladders, there's a management track. Oh, I manage a bunch of people. And then there's the technical IC track or individual contributor track. And so basically you get to, you know, principal and senior principal, and then you become what's called a partner. Literally, we're partners in the company. And then above partner, there's distinguished engineer. And I guess, I don't know what, we got like 100,000+ employees, and I think we only have 20 or 30 distinguished engineers. And then above that is technical fellow. So one more rung in the ladder. But basically, it's those people who are able to solve a class of problems that other people aren't able to solve and to deliver business results in a consistent way. So basically, that's sort of what it takes to be a partner, and then sort of distinguished engineers maybe either do bigger things or have more business impact, or more importantly, have a track record of being able to do that over and over again.
You know, I've heard a very similar kind of description of you specifically as a distinguished engineer, and it's always come down to changing the face of how Microsoft operates.
Yeah, there you go.
And so when I've always thought of it is you know, you invented PowerShell. Most of us didn't think that that was going to fly at all, but now all of Microsoft has changed with it. And some of the things that we'll be talking about here and giving you additional resources on, things that we've gotten to today, like configuration management and how this works with Azure and all of this, is really has changed the way that we manage anything to do with Windows. And it's not just Windows. There's a lot of third parties that adopted PowerShell for their products.
Yeah, right? It's awesome.
Well, so we know.
Can I tell you what the best part of it all is? Now I go to a lot of conferences, and just the number of people that come up to me and say thank you, you know, and they tell me their hero story. They say, hey, you know, I learned PowerShell, and then I was able to do this at work, and I was able to help this team, or I was able to get this promotion, or be able to get this raise. And they tell me their hero stories and thank me, and then tell me to please thank the team. And I'm telling you, I was on the plane last night, and that happened. I was at the airport before getting on the plane. And it happened. I was at the conference waiting, talking to some guy on the way out, and some guy's like, oh, you're leaving? Please let me just say. And it's just wonderful.
You know,
the ability to have impact on people's lives and really help them advance the career. You know what? I ran into my mentor. I haven't seen him in 15
years. It's funny. I just ran into mine.
at IBM, I had this mentor. And so I had lunch with or dinner with him, and we were talking about stories, and I was thanking him for all the things that he had taught me. And he said, well, let me stop you. He said, you taught me something. And it was, you know, it was one of the most impactful things that someone had ever told me. And he said, I remember when we met and you were talking and you said, the people who use our products should be heroes. And they should get promotions for using our products. Those are the products that we should be developing. And I said, yeah, that's right. That's the way I've always believed it. I believe that if you use my products, you should be rich. You know, literally, that my products should help you be successful, help you with your career. And because I said, look, who's going to be more loyal than the customer for whom you got a promotion, for whom you made them money? You put money in their pocket, people like you.
You know, you mentioned...
Odd how that works.
You mentioned something really fascinating that I get a lot of questions about in regards to you. You go to a lot of conferences. You are known as being somebody who's been on the front lines promoting PowerShell, the technologies of PowerShell, why people should be automating. And one of the questions I get all the time is he really that nice as I've seen him on the videos? Is he as nice as that I've seen at a conference? Would it be okay if I went up and said hello and shook his hand? Would that bother him, or would that be a good thing to do? And so how would you, you know?
I'm not that nice, but I am very friendly. I love it when people come talk to me, especially if you tell me your hero story. I love hearing those things. So yeah, I love talking to people.
Awesome. Now, tell us about some of the things that you do now, besides going to the conferences as lead architect for server.
And all
that. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I can't give you a whole lot of details, but I will tell you this. We're about to announce some of the most revolutionary stuff I've worked on since I came to the company.
Oh, wow.
And I worked on PowerShell. So that's big stuff.
That's big stuff.
And I'm telling you, the future of Windows Server has never looked brighter. I got to tell you, I'm just crazy enthusiastic about some of the stuff. Maybe by the time this publishes, you'll know what I'm talking about. You know, it's really that transition. Microsoft at some point was an enterprise desktop company. And then we said, oh, we're going to be a server company. And people laughed at us. I mean, outside, I was laughing at Microsoft. Like, what are you kidding me? A desktop operating system whose defining user experience is called the blue screen of death.
Right.
And you're going to take that and turn it into a Windows, you know, a Windows server, and you want me to run my business on it and trust that? Are you crazy? And yeah, today, this year, 73% of all servers built this year will end up with Windows Server on it. The world's most successful enterprise operating system ever. And now we're going to the cloud. And just as people doubted us, the ability to make a transition to server, some people doubt our ability to make it to the cloud. And so, you know, basically myself, Mark Arsenovich, we've been working together. There's a bunch of us, of course, but Mark and I have been leading our prospective organizations to do some amazing stuff, and we're going to tell everybody about it at Build and Ignite.
And that's another thing, is make sure you go to conferences like Build and Ignite, because that's where you get some of the greatest and newest information.
Now,
go ahead.
And of course, the PowerShell Summit.
The PowerShell Summit. Got to go. You'll see. We'll show it. Yes, must go.
Okay.
Now we've got some questions, and so let's talk about some of the learning of PowerShell. We got a great question in here, I just want to start off with this one because it was really well done. So I'm just going to read it. My team is using PowerShell more and more to do things like set up a work environment, run tests, collect data, crunch numbers, yada yada. And other similar tasks. We mostly run by hand today, but want to run part as more of a hands-off process. PowerShell adoption began organically, and currently our scripts are not very uniform, and you might say a bit of a mess. Different names, different styles, just what you started out talking with. So basically, are there some basic guidelines we should insist on to avoid digging ourselves into a hole that, you know, but won't slow people down from the adoption?
In general, I'm a fan of don't make it too right too soon, you know, because sometimes you could do that and you're like, oh, we're going to set up the formal guidelines. And then people are like, yeah, never mind.
Yeah,
I'll just use the command line. So you want it to be an aid of something, and you want to standardize and formalize things when having done it, everybody looks and says, oh, that was the right thing to do. If people are viewing it as a tax, then that's not a good thing to do. So I wouldn't worry too much about being too formal too soon. Now, I will say that there's a number of tools out there that can help with this. In PowerShell version, I forgot, we shipped what's called the AST. The AST then allows you, I think it's version 3. Allows you to treat your script as a data structure and then program that data structure and then write a program. So what that means is, in the next version of PowerShell, we've been, I don't know if we've shown this yet, but if not, you're going to see it soon. The next version of PowerShell, we ship with Script Analyzer. And Script Analyzer does exactly that. Takes your program, turns it into a data structure, has a set of extensible rules. Hey, use noun verb names, don't use plural names, etc. And then we'll tell you, hey, align this, column that, you're doing this, might want to change it, okay? So that's coming out there, and that's one of the best things to do. Additionally, there's a great product, and I'm just going to do a plug because it's such an amazing thing. It's called ISE Steroids by Tobias Weldner.
Yeah.
And it's a plug-in to ISE, the Integrated Scripting Environment, and he does that in real time, and he'll show squiggle brackets on the lines, and then you say, oh, well, what is that? And he says, oh, here's the rule, and you can find out more about the rule. And then he's got a button that says, fix it.
Right.
And fix this one or fix them all. And it's well worth investing in. You know, taking a look at that tool, it is truly an amazing tool.
So there are best practices available. I also want to show you where you can get a free book on the best practices that are being used for what Jeffrey just mentioned, the Script Analyzer, which is coming out with version 5. And if you want to see a demonstration of the Script Analyzer, we actually did it in our DSC MVAs that just came out recently. But let me show you this real quick. I'm going to launch a browser real fast and just show you that there is some resources for you. And I'm going to take you here probably a couple of times just to point these out. A lot of you ask a lot of great questions, and I just want to show you where you can get additional support for your questions and ask even more questions. At PowerShell.org, the forums, whoops, for some reason, It just went off my screen. Let me see if I can go backwards. Apparently not. Let me bring it back up. And so at PowerShell.org, you can go in the forums, and I'm going to remind you this to continue to ask your questions, and you have a lot of people to help you. But underneath resources, free ebooks, one of the free ebooks here listed is the PowerShell Community Best Practices, and this can help you start to evolve your automation scripts, and as you start building advanced functions, and making them the proper way. I do also want to point out that, as Jeffrey pointed out, the ISC steroids program does this for you in real time while you're actually scripting to help you get those patterns and practices. And the new script analyzer is an extensible set of rules that are going to help you check it. So
yeah, I think ISC steroids now has refactoring tools as well.
It has refactoring as well. Yes, it does.
Yeah. So all the things that developers have been used to, well, not all, but many of the things that developers have been used to, and frankly, a lot of things people have been asking me for, Tobias is delivering in his product.
Yeah, Tobias has already got in there. Now, we actually got several questions along this line of how to better improve and, you know, where are the best practices kind of thing. But, you know, something else here is we get a lot of questions in about the actual MCSE, MCSA certification series. And a lot of you are looking at the 7410, 7411 exam, 7412, and a lot of the questions come in is, in those courses and for those exams, they want us to use PowerShell to do things as we're learning server, such as, I need to manage DNS or I need to do XYZ. How do I find out how to do that? And I think a lot of people don't know about the discovery capabilities of PowerShell. In other words, really? It's not how do I manage DNS by looking at a book, but how do I get PowerShell to teach me?
Well, you know, actually, so here's a trick. So here, can we show the screen? Yeah, okay, so there's this thing called the command window. Okay, let's make this a little bit bigger if we can. Yeah, see this? And so here's what you're showing you. This is PowerShell ISE. And notice it's got the modules here, okay? And here you're seeing all the modules, and these are all the commands, okay? So what you can do is you can go say, oh, well, hey, I think that ISE is going to be about AppLocker. And you click AppLocker, and it shows you, oh, here are the AppLocker commands. Or I bet you, hey, what about iSCSI targets? And you see the things for iSCSI targets. Now, the next thing you want to take a look at is here, let's say get command minus module, let's say iSCSI, how do you spell iSCSI? Target, let's see if that's right. Okay, that was right, iSCSI target. Okay, but now what you can do is you can then say select verb noun pipe to out grid view. Okay, and so then go here and say, oh, well, let's sort these by noun. And you say, okay, well, iSCSI target, there's get, new, remove, set. Oh, iSCSI target server configuration. Let's make this bigger. Okay, so basically you can kind of zig and zag and take a look at the module that gets you in the ballpark. Then you can look at the nouns and see what verbs, or alternatively, by the way, so you just click on the title and say, oh, what are all my getters? Oh, that's a good way to start. What are the things I can get? Targets. And so then what happens, here's the way I think about it. I think, you know, what's the area? Look at the area. And then I look at the nouns. Right? And what you'll see is if you have any familiarity with the domain, you'll see that those nouns begin to make sense. Like, okay. And then you'll take a look at the verbs, and after you've used PowerShell a while, you'll discover that the verbs are pretty regular. In particular, if there's any question about that, what you do is you type get verb, pipe to out grid view, right? And look, we even tell you what the verbs are, right? Okay. So here we tell you what the verbs are, okay? And notice they're by group. So here are common verbs. Here are the verbs associated with data. Checkpoint, compare, compress, etc. Here are the verbs associated with life cycle and diagnostics, communication, security. So we've got a well-defined set of verbs. So you look at the area, you look at the nouns, and then you know the verbs, and all of a sudden you can begin to guess. I mean, that's what we were trying to go for, was you learn enough PowerShell, and then you just start guessing. I bet you there was to joke about, hey, somebody put a fish finder on the system. Do you know how to manage it? Sure. get-fishfinder, you know, set fish finder slash depth equals, you know, 14. So, yeah, just learn the model and then guess. And chances are you're in the ballpark.
And I think that's a real important point, is that PowerShell will show you what you need, but you first have to start asking the questions. And just like Jeffrey showed you, you can use the discovery capabilities of PowerShell to find the particular thing that you want to manage. So if it's DNS, if it's DHCP, yes, there are commandlets for that, and you can discover those yourself. So whatever thing you're doing in server, whatever product you're working with, that's how we use it with PowerShell. We discover it first, then we can look at the help file for it and then start to execute it. You know,
it's a key point. PowerShell is not about remembering things. It is not about remembering things. It is not about remembering things. I can't remember anything. I got a very small working set of memory. What I can do is I can figure stuff out. So you learn how to figure stuff out, and then you get in front of a keyboard and you do it.
And you know, one of the interesting things, we're going to help you more with that discovery in the answer to this next question. We got a question in that somebody, not just somebody, but a lot of people, had watched the very first PowerShell MVAs we did almost 2 years ago. So we did something on getting started with PowerShell, and you'll find them on the MVA site, and then advanced scripting and making functions, that kind of stuff. And the question was, well, those were on PowerShell V3. Are you going to do them on V5? And I think an interesting thing is that everything we did 2 years ago is still the same way today, because that's how you do it today, except we've added things, right?
Exactly.
Like DSC that we just shot some MVAs on.
Yep.
So there's really no reason to have that stuff done as a V5. It's still all valid, right?
Exactly. If you see a PowerShell V3 book, buy it. It's fine. Now then, there's some new stuff, but honestly, you read some of that from the release notes, et cetera. But everything that you see in PowerShell V3 should be just fine.
So one of the things you guys can do is, if you're starting out with PowerShell or you don't know everything that you need to know about PowerShell, or you want to learn how to discover things, like I want to work with PowerShell, where can I find the commandlets for it? You can find that in that first series on the MVA on getting started with PowerShell. We take you through all of that and how it works. So we've got V5 coming up, and I've certainly got some questions for you to talk about some new features on V5. Yeah. We got some questions in there. But anything else, if somebody is getting started with PowerShell and they're learning PowerShell, what's the philosophy they need to keep in mind as they're moving forward and learning it?
Yeah, so basically it's discovery, discovery, discovery. Have a sense of joy and fun. I really mean that. I mean, the best thing you can do is to embrace the sense of joy of exploring the system. Be real. It will be a bit uncomfortable to begin with. You're like, oh, I don't know how to do this. What's this? That's fine. That's fine. That happens to me all the time. So just go with it. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, check this out. Hey, Jason, come here, check this out. And then you're like, Jeffrey, come here, check this out. And that's what we did with the team. We found out that as we explored the system, we came up with things, we discovered things, we started sharing. And you don't do that by yourself. You do that as part of the community. So when you find this stuff, participate in the community. Say, hey, did you know this? Look what I just found. And see what other people did and share. And you will have a great sense of fun. By the way, and then you'll meet some of the greatest people in the industry. I'm telling you, we're going to go to the PowerShell Summit in a couple weeks. And some of the greatest people in the industry are going to be there. If you ever have a chance, get to a PowerShell Summit.
Definitely.
In fact, I was just at this other conference.
Yeah.
And the guy was saying, last year he went to the PowerShell Summit. He says, I've been doing conferences for a really long time. And he says, the quality of the people there was unbelievable.
Well, I think one of the coolest things that I got from last year's PowerShell Summit was a guy that I knew came up to me and he said, you know, I didn't know about coming to this power. I didn't know if I had enough skills and I wasn't too sure how this was going to go. He says, but this is the greatest thing in the world. And I said, why is that? And he says, because I just had breakfast with Jeffrey Snover and I got to ask my question, which that's what he wanted to do. And that's one of the best parts about that summit. It's all PowerShell. It's with the people that made it, the team, all of that, the MVPs. You can sit down and talk to these people. It's not just a 45-minute session and you're done. So that's why we like it so much.
I usually tell some Bill Gates stories.
Oh, and those are always
include lots of F-bombs, which is why I can never tell them here.
Right. That's the best part. You said something that I think is something that a lot of IT people have forgotten, that is one of the most important, inspiring things for me in the process of working with PowerShell is that have fun. Because you said this a couple of years ago, in fact, you said, you know why I like PowerShell? Because it makes computers fun again.
Yeah.
And it does. It really does. So now, a couple of questions have come in, and this is one of the ones that I just loved. It starts off at saying that this might be a silly question. I don't think this is a silly question, but it says, why it was the version number 10 hard-coded in the PowerShell installation path?
Do you remember I said the hardest part of getting PowerShell out the door was Microsoft? Well, that's the short answer. The longer answer was, at the time, there was great concern about versioning and whether or not we had worked out all the versioning issues with .NET. And so what had happened was, one of my big contributions to this conversation was to say, well, by the way, so one of the keys to architecture is the art of deciding when one thing should be two and two things should be one. And so we had many go-rounds, lots and lots of things about versioning, and nobody could get their head around it. And I stepped back and I chewed on this and I said, ah, that's the problem. We're having one conversation when in fact there are three. And so I articulated, there's versioning here, there's versioning here, and there's versioning here. So let's, and there's a different strategy associated with each one of those. And so for each one of those, I laid out how we were going to address those issues. One of the ramifications of that is one of the versioning stories is the versioning of the language, which is to say major breaking changes in the language. And so that's why it's .ps1. This is version one of the language. Now we've extended it, but we've extended it in compatible ways. So version 5, PowerShell version 5 still uses .ps1. Why? Because there's been no breaking changes. And that's why it's the same thing. It's in the directory PowerShell 1.0. If we at some point we looked and we said, you know what? We're on the wrong path here. And we have to make some fundamental differences. We're going to do .ps2. And that's fine, because then we got PS1, and that goes to this, and then PS2, that goes to that. Then you'd see .2, 2.0 in the directory.
And I think one of the interesting things about this is that if I write a script in version 2 of PowerShell, it's going to work in version 5.
Yeah.
Now, not necessarily, not going backwards from V5 to V2, but going up, it's going to work. But if all of a sudden you decided it needed to be noun-verb rather than verb-noun.
Exactly.
That would be a huge breaking change, and then we would get that new thing. That always fascinated me at first, because when version 2 of PowerShell came out, I first went, what, they can't change a version number at Microsoft, you know? It's like, but no, that's great. Now, at this point, I think we'll shift our conversation a little bit from the learning side of PowerShell. We've got plenty of MBAs to help you get started with PowerShell, into some just general, random, technical questions.
Yep.
That we can kind of shoot towards.
Shoot.
So we've got a lot of questions that are on specific technologies. Let me give you two different ones. One is, and we got actually a couple on this. How do I change the Windows 8.1 locking screen to say whatever I want so I can tell people not to log on to this box till I want them to, or put a message up or do something like that? And how do I set permissions on an OU? These kind of technical, very specific questions. When you're using PowerShell, how do you go about solving these problems? Because everybody's going to have their own specific, unique thing they want to know.
That's a great way to phrase the question, because I have no idea the answer to those questions. So again, the way you do it is you start off, you say, oh, well, lock screen, get command star lock. There's nothing about a lock screen there. Something about screen. And then quickly, you're going to realize
Can you zoom that in a little bit?
Look at that.
My eyes are so bad. Oh, okay,
Sorry about that. Yeah. I didn't realize that. Smart screen settings.
Oh, hey.
I wonder if that has anything.
I don't know.
Anyway, so probably not. But what you do is you explore there, and then I don't know the answer. So I use a search engine, and one of the great things about the PowerShell is you say PowerShell and something, and it's pretty easy to find. Or you search for commandlet. Okay. So at some point, I don't know if you heard the story, but at some point, the documentation people are like, enough with this commandlet nonsense. It's command. Command is a real world. Commandlet's not. I said, no, we're going to use commandlet. And like, no, we're the documentation people, and we own this thing, and it's going to be command. I said, well, let's not, let's think about it this way. Bring up a browser. And they said, yeah, bring up a search engine. I said, okay, now search command. And they said, oh, look, 19 million hits. I said, right, search commandlet. I said, well, this is the very beginning. I said, well, there's only 64,000. I said, see, command's better. I said, no, click on one of those things. And then click on commandlet. Anything you type on commandlet, you're going to find our content.
Right.
And so it's basically commandlet's a search term. A search engine optimization term. So if you search for commandlet, there you go. That's how you find things.
And I think that's a very valuable point that you should keep in mind is that you can go to your favorite search engine and type in, I want this, then CMDLET, and you're going to get back all PowerShell results, and you're not going to get back a bunch of other stuff. But
Two more answers?
Oh, yeah.
Ed Wilson.
Oh, Ed Wilson, yeah, definitely. The scripting guy.
When in trouble, fear, or doubt, call Ed Wilson. Ed Wilson is the scripting guy. He knows everything. Yep. Or if he doesn't know it, he's written about it. So that's great. But the general, more general answer is the community. You reach out to the community. Hey, what about this? Now, there's one other thing I want to point out about searching, and that was this. So imagine I did something like stop process minus ID 13. Okay, so notice here there's this thing called a fully qualified error ID. Okay, so what this is meant to do, let's make this smaller. Let's do that again. Because what this is, the intent of this is you just take this thing, we never localize it, and it's meant for search engines. So you go into your favorite search engine and you paste that there. And voila, you get a bunch of information about that error message. So concretely, fully, whenever you have an error, you get a fully qualified error ID, and that fully qualified error ID is meant to be typed into search engines.
Now, along these lines, so we can go to PowerShell and ask PowerShell if it has commandlets. A lot of times you run across problems that there isn't a commandlet to solve because it's your own kind of problem. Now,
yes.
PowerShell is very extensible. You don't have only just the commandlets, right? We can then go to things like WMI and .NET, just like a developer would be, because that's what we're trying to learn to be, is developers.
Yes.
And we can solve problems through .NET the same way. So maybe there isn't a commandlet that solves your problem, but you could go to .NET and use the .NET framework to solve your problem.
That's exactly correct. Or COM.
Or
in fact,
COM.
I did a search on that question, and I found an article saying, yeah, here's a COM object to do that. And I didn't have a chance to try it out, so sorry. But if you do a search engine and try that, again, PowerShell and I think lock screen and set maybe, and it was on Stack Overflow. Stack Overflow is another great resource.
Okay, yeah, great resource.
And somebody had asked that very question, and someone said, oh, here's how you do it. And I didn't try it to find out what the semantics were.
So you can find an answer to it, and for the AD question, there's an MVA on PowerShell and Active Directory that has the answer to your question for setting permissions on the OU, and it's pretty cool. You can use get and set ACL or ACL to do it to OUs. I'm just throwing it out there, but you can find those all on the MVAs or just try it out in the search engine. Everybody's going to have their own specific technical things that they want to do.
Correct me if I'm wrong. That's because get and set ACL work against namespaces. And
yes.
The namespaces are there multiple namespaces and Active Directory. I don't know if you know this, but when you get the Active Directory module, you have Active Directory as a namespace.
Right.
CD into Active Directory.
Which
love
is
that.
Totally cool.
Yeah,
it's totally, totally cool. Now, I have a fun kind of question because I've wanted to know the answer to this.
Okay.
Get-service.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you already know that somebody is probably going to say this, get-service. I can use set-service and I can set the startup type, but I can't use get-service to see the startup type. Why is that?
Okay, well, here's the deal. So because .NET is not a full reflection of the underlying Win32 capabilities. That's the answer. And then that team did that and then went on to something else. And they haven't gone back and updated that. So the real answer there is we should rework that command to use the SIM class, Win32 service. And that's a little bit different, but it's a much richer thing.
And I just want to say, if you're the one that asked that question, nice job. And you did point out that, well, we've been using the SIM class to get it, but why isn't it in the commandlet? And that's kind of a good question that's been around for quite some time. So that's awesome. A couple of other things that we have on the technical side. Now, some of these are going to be pretty technical, but I wanted to ask you about this. So SMA, Azure Automation, This is a huge topic right now for a lot of reasons. So Azure, SMA, and the orchestration or automation with SMA, the first question is why are we using workflow SMA? Why can't we just have regular old-fashioned PowerShell? And I think that's really the answer is what SMA is supposed to do.
No, needs the answer the is, that's a great question.
Oh.
You know, write that down. If it happens, it's because of you. I want you to know that.
Ooh, awesome. You asked a very interesting question then.
I'm not announcing anything, okay. But I will just highlight that, you know, Build and Ignite are great conferences, and you know, we work pretty quick, so.
That here's also on SMA and Azure, we have another question in there, and this is about we've had a lot of questions about VMs, where people will say, I want to apply a DSC configuration. Now, we haven't gotten into the DSC section yet, but I just want to throw this out with the SMA stuff.
Yeah.
But I only want to apply that DSC configuration to a VM after it's been spun up under some certain conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do that I can't write that in the DSC configuration.
Yeah. Yep.
So how should I do this? And my question to you was, isn't that what SMA is supposed to help us
with? Exactly what SMA is for.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Exactly. So here's the thing to get in focus. And I said, desired state configuration really was designed as a platform technology that then solutions would be layered on top of. Now, the fact of the matter is you got a scripting language. So a scripting language you can do anything with. And so you can script your own solution. But this is where, you know, Chef and Aditi and Guardrail, they've got products in the space, and they're layering on top of DSC, and they're going great guns. Now, a lot of people then say, to solve exactly these sort of problems, SMA, people are using that for exactly that. Hey, that's great, but I need to put it in this distributed workflow and do it that way. So,
And I think that's a great answer. There's a lot of conversation going on right now that... you know, using the orchestration capabilities of SMA is part of our solution, and then when we get the VM up, DSC is the rest of our solution. That's what seems to be all the conversation is around.
Peanut butter and chocolate.
Peanut butter and chocolate. Oh, okay, I kind of like that. Here's a kind of one that came in that was fascinating. What is happening in Microsoft on the Pester project?
Oh, okay. Did I mention to you how great it is to attend the PowerShell Summit? We're going to get lots of details in the PowerShell Summit, but I will just tell you this. So basically, we talked a little bit about this. So Pester is a unit test framework for scripts. Now let's go back. What's going on here? And the answer is, surprise, surprise, PowerShell is very successful. Very successful. And as it's successful, people are using it and saying, hey, you know what? This isn't just, you know, Jeffrey and Jason sitting there on their machines. Now I'm running my bank using these PowerShell scripts. And with doing something that's important, I want to be able to take these scripts and I want to put them in source code control. There's already lots of great stuff there. And I want to make sure everybody's following corporate guidance, you know, because, look, I mentioned you don't, you know, prematurely get too formal. When you're running a real production system that really matters, you want to be pretty formal, and people do want to be pretty formal. So you're going to want something like Script Analyzer. And then the other thing is, and then when people make changes, I got to make sure that those changes didn't break anything. So you want a unit test framework. And so that's what Pester is. It's a unit test framework for PowerShell scripts so that you can make sure that your PowerShell code actually does what it's supposed to do. And so that was developed by the community. And what we announced to this date, although come to the PowerShell Summit and you're going to learn more details. But here's a crazy thing. We think that this is important for our community. And as I looked at this, I said, you know what? those guys over there, they're big PowerShell users too, and their community's gonna have the same problem. Because it turns out that Pester, while great, doesn't do exactly what we needed it to do, and we needed to do more. And they're gonna have the same problem. And their name is VMware. And so, you know, some people think VMware is a big competitor with Microsoft, and at some level they are, but at some level they're not. They're fellow PowerShell users, their customers are passionate PowerShell users, and so I reached out to them and I said, hey, would you like to work with us and this community group to take Pester, promulgate it to our customers, and then work together to migrate it to meet the needs that I know you're going to have and I know that we have. And they did. They were very friendly.
And you bring up a point that is very important that I think a lot of people don't know yet. This is not the Microsoft. This isn't your daddy's Microsoft. This is not the Microsoft of old. People are surprised when you say something that, yeah, we're working with VMware to make this better because we know that they're going to have a problem. And so we'll work together and get this all solved. That's like heresy.
Isn't it great?
That's just it. It's great. Cross-platform.
Yeah.
Tell us about the cross-platform, your view of cross-platform, like Linux and in Azure and all of this kind of stuff.
Sure. So we've already discussed that we're taking desired state configuration. So first, if you don't aware of this, in Windows we have WMI. And then what we said was, as part of my initiative to be able to be a cloud OS, I need to be able to manage everything. So everything means routers, storage devices, and all the guests. Well, a bunch of these routers and network devices have Linux in them. So what we did was we took WMI and we created an open source version of WMI called OMI. And then we got that out of the industry. And so today, there's a very good chance if you buy a router today, it has OMI in it, and you can just go to Windows and start managing it using PowerShell commandlets because it's talking OMI. Now then what we did was we said, hey, that's great, but we also want to be able to do desired state configuration. And so we've been working on a desired state configuration agent that, again, we're open sourcing, making available to these vendors. And we're also producing an OData server. So I don't know if you know that.
No.
So a lot of the hardware vendors now are very interested in having REST APIs. And so we said, okay, great. They had, in fact, a group of hardware manufacturers said, we'd like to have something new, a REST way to do some of the functions that we did in IPMI. That's talking to hardware, like boot, change your boot sequence, power down, power up, and also chassis managers. So you got a rack and you got a device that can talk to all those things. They said they wanted a REST way to do that. And we said, oh, great, let's talk about that. And they were pretty close to done when we said, yeah, that's great, but that's not really a good way to do it because it's just sort of another sort of random REST API.
Right.
And if I do that, then I'm going to talk to you, and then you're going to want to have vendor value-added extensions, so then I'm going to have to do that, and they're going to be different, so I got to do that. And then when somebody wants to do the next device, I got to do that. It's not going to work. So why don't we adopt OData? So the OData were a set of conventions for REST APIs that allow us to be more formal. And it's REST, but basically it just says, hey, if we're going to talk about an instance, here's the way we talk about an instance. If we talk about a collection of those instances, here's how we refer to it. If you do sorting, here's how you do it. If you do queries, here's how you do it. And here's how you document what you can do. Right? So just a set of conventions on REST. Right? You could have done them by yourself, and we just wrote them down. But what it does is it allows us to go point at that and then auto-generate a set of commandlets. And so people like that story. Like, is that real? And it's like, yeah, that's real. And it's like, well, we don't know anything about this OData. That's and it'd probably be hard and it'd probably be complex. And it's like, well, yeah, could be. But you know that OMI that we did? I'm going to take the guy that did that and I'm going to have him work on this. So we produced an open source implementation of OData that these guys are now using. And so now at the Open Compute Summit, we showed Windows, pointing at an Intel rack scale architecture, and then I believe a Dell box, and they had implemented the standards, and I think one of them had implemented vendor value add extensions, and from within the Windows, we were able to point at them, auto-generate the commandlets. The standard commandlets would work against both, but then when we pointed to the machine that had vendor value added extensions, we went and got the vendor value added extensions that you could script against with no effort, and they didn't have to put any software on our box. And guess what? They like that story.
They like that story a lot.
So the nice thing about this, now to get to your question, things really changed under our fantastic leader, Satya. And it's as simple as, you know, just a clear focus. He says, focus in on making our customers successful. Make sure they use our products, make sure they're successful with their products, make sure they love our products. And I got to tell you, as an engineer, what could be better than that?
Exactly.
So
and that's what the excitement level that a lot of people, especially if you're MCP and you're working towards other certifications, you're working in the industry, it's exciting right now because it's about the right things for the customer, and the right things aren't what they used to be. The right things now are, I should be able to use DSC to manage a Linux box or a switch, or I should be able to get commandlets to manage that.
Right.
And was it made by Microsoft? No, but and that's okay.
And you know, in Rusinovich's business, right? So Rusinovich runs a CTO for Azure. In his business, I like to say, he earns more money if he has 10 instances of Linux than if he has 2 instances of Windows. So a lot of Azure, it's about volume. What that really means is Azure has to be the sea that refuses no river. It has to be whatever customers want to run. Azure has to be the best place to do it. Well, guess what? There's a bunch of that he can't do because I run the hypervisor, right? We drive the hypervisor. So we're investing to make Mark successful. We know that that's critical, that people that Azure and Windows Server is the best place to run Linux workloads. So we're investing heavily to make sure that that is the case.
And what you just said probably has a lot of people sitting there going, what? Did it run Linux workload? What?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of what's happening right now. And a lot of this has come from not just the invention of PowerShell, but it's the mindset going forward that, no, wait a minute, we got to manage this. We have to work with this. We have to be able to deal with that. It doesn't matter whose tag is on that box. We have to work with this.
Yeah, Satya, make your customers successful. We got smart guys to figure out the monetization. Don't worry about that. Go do what the right thing is. And I can tell you, I've never been more optimistic about the company than I am for that one reason.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, I have a couple of other little technical questions and then a couple of categories for us to go into. Almost like a game show in a funny kind of way. There's a couple of requests that came in. I'm going to turn them into questions rather than requests. What about making new as an alias to new object?
Yeah, at some point I had been arguing for that, and what we decided to do was to not do that, to keep that as a reserved keyword, because if we do a new object, that has an alias, new as an alias for new object. New object has a well-defined set of semantics. And we thought that if at some point we might want to do new with a different set of semantics. So that's why we reserved it. In fact, I think somebody was saying the other day that they tried to do something and PowerShell wouldn't let them. It said it was a reserved keyword. At some point we didn't do that. We just said, here's what we're using. And then we went to do something and somebody had used the thing and we were going to break them. And it's like, oh no, now what do? We don't want to break them. I don't know what we chose to, but I said, hey, go grab a bunch of words, figure out anything that you might want to use, and then allocate it. So that's why you can't do that.
Now, and a couple of interesting questions about ISE and the development environments.
Yep.
And it's funny because we got questions that went both directions. One from a dev using Visual Studio that wants to know, what's the deal? Why don't we have PowerShell in Visual Studio? And another person using the ISE that's learning dev that wants to know if you're going to put syntax highlighting and all that for C# in the ISE. So it's kind of this beautiful world of everybody's now learning to be a dev.
By the way, so this is DevOps. You know,
DevOps.
DevOps is the cool hipster phrase, but the reality is if you go back and read the Mona Manifesto, it's exactly what I've been talking about. I said, look, one of the core problems we have here is I have the developers over here using one set of tools, and I got the operators here using a different set of tools, and they can't talk to each other. Like, hey, I need some help. Can you give me some help? It's like, no. And it's like, oh, well, what did you do here? And they can't help. And so the idea is we wanted to be able to have a tool that operators could use and developers could use. And so that's why you have squiggle brackets instead of begin and end or do and done. And it's why the syntax looks very much like C sharp. Now, not entirely, because it's an interactive shell. And C sharp is an interactive shell. And we invoke commands. And the reason why we invoke commands, or the reason that we invoke commands, is the reason why you have dollar signs in front of variables to distinguish a variable from a command. That's what's going on there. Anyway, but we wanted to have a single tool. Now, in this release, release by release, we've been doing more and more developer-oriented stuff. In this release, there's a lot more. So, you want to be able to do PowerShell in Visual Studio?
Yeah.
You can do it.
Posh
Tools. Posh Tools. Let's see if I can find that. So, if you search for P-O-S-H-T-O-O-L-S, Posh Tools. There you go, GitHub and Posh Tools. And there's one from Adam Driscoll, and there's one from the Visual Studio team, who I think is working with him. Anyway, so Posh Tools, it's a plugin, and then what you can do, we just got a demo of it, it's wonderful. In Visual Studio, you load this up, and then you can edit PowerShell. You get an IntelliSense for PowerShell.
Right.
You can do breakpoints, single step, step into, etc. And when you do that, when you do a breakpoint, you get the locals window.
Nice.
Yeah. And you know what? Here's the thing. At some point when I did that, it's like, no, that's not right. And so I just went and said, hey, you know, that's not right. You're not doing the proper object mapping. And like 2 days later, it's like, oh, thank you, Jeffrey. Here's another version. So this is like just exactly what you want. So this is a very eager team, very eager to meet customer satisfaction, meet their needs. And so if you tell them what you're looking for, they are moving pretty quick. So that's in Visual Studio. And then there's a question about whether or not, how much we invest in ISE to do that. And we're looking at it.
Well, you know, it's really fascinating. If you're working in Visual Studio now with Posh Tools and Adam Driscoll's plugin from the gallery, it's interesting because as an IT operator, I'm using Visual Studio now to learn more about C Sharp and the actual language itself behind it. And I, of course, am using PowerShell in it. But as an IT operator, I spend most of my time in the ISE or some third-party IDE to help me out with this. And along those lines, I get an interesting question that I had an answer for this, but I got a sneaky feeling your answer might be different. And it's kind of weird. We're in a shell at command line, and somebody wants to know. This is not a dumb question, by the way. This is actually a very good, there's no such thing as a dumb question. There's dumb people, but there's no dumb questions. That's how we get smarter. Dialog boxes. Is there a way I can make a dialog box in PowerShell?
Oh, yeah.
Because I just want a simple dialog box. That's all I want. I want to give something to help desk or something. I want to make a simple dialog box.
Yep. So, there's a bunch of tools for that. So, I think one of the more
popular ones. And this is the TCLTK reference.
So there's one out there. Let's see. Primal Script has a great product in this space. And what they do is, what's it called? PowerShell Forms? PowerShell Studio's the product.
Right. PowerShell Studio. And actually, it's kind of funny, since you mentioned Sapien, Primal Script 2015 has a dialogue creator tool.
Yes, exactly.
And PowerShell Studio lets you do dialogues and full WinForm apps. So they have a couple products, so check out Sapien.
Yeah, and it's a full studio, so you could drag and drop buttons, and you say, oh, when I double-click here, and it's all written, it renders in PowerShell, and it actually works very, very quickly and very, very nicely. So that's
one. And you can write it by hand. I mean, you could write a script, and you could write Windows by hand, but that's kind of monotonous, right?
Yep. And then I think it was James Brundage had written Show UI.
Show UI.
And Show UI is a domain-specific language for GUIs in WPF. And so it's nice. It's got dynamic layout and such. I found it a little bit difficult to get my head around, but I'm not a GUI guy. So there's that. And I think James also has one for web browsers.
I think so, too. I know the Show UI one, yeah.
Pipeworks?
Pipeworks, yeah.
Pipeworks, yeah. So there's a number of tools out there. The PowerShell team has, at this point, not done one of those. We think about it. I think about it. I'm actively thinking about it. I will tell you this. There are a lot of questions that come up. What about this? What about that? What about that? We don't have a problem of what to do next. The real problem is what next thing we do is going to have the maximal impact. So there is a gazillion great ideas out there. My challenge as kind of lead architect for Windows is to figure out which of those things is going to move the needle the most. And it's not as simple as you might think, because part of the trick is I will go deliver this function and deliver this value to the customer. Great. Sometimes it's I will go this far, and that will enable these people to go deliver and deliver more. And so getting that right is a trick.